Good evening and welcome to another edition of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com. I'm Alan Jedi Zog, and on the other side, John English, the Germs guy. And we've got alongside, too, our usual producer, Mr. Torn by Devin, Devin Masters. John, how are you?
Doing good.
Good.
I'm calming down from the emotion of the end of that game.
Yeah, you were tweeting your feelings on the Jedi and Germs account, and wow.
Yeah, so people listening to this know that the game just got over like 20 minutes ago, so we're recording that. We're kind of fresh in our post-game mentality.
Yes, we are.
The Jazz led for most of that game, or at least they kept it right in there, and then they wind up only losing by 5 points. So there can be a lot of positives to take away from this game. But it's one of those games that where I learned a lot about the Clippers that I didn't like. But we can get into that. The Clippers swept the Jazz for the season now. The Clippers have won 12 straight. Did you catch that stat?
12 straight over the Jazz?
12 straight against the Jazz, yeah.
And there have been some, I know you have your complaints about tonight, but there have been some games the last couple of years. One of them had Billups, I think, that went to overtime that still sits very distastefully in my mouth.
Yeah, this one, I mean, it just felt like the Clippers were complaining all night, just constantly going after the refs on everything. And they were letting him get away with some things that surprised me. I mean, the way they were so dramatically complaining, it kind of reminded me of like 90s-style basketball where guys could complain more. I thought they were clamping down on that kind of thing, but they let a lot slide tonight, and that kind of made the game get chippier than usual.
Yeah, it did. I was actually surprised that a technical was not called on Chris Paul sooner as well. There was one particular play there where he went after the ref after a turnover, and I thought for sure he'd get teed up, and he probably should have.
Matt Barnes should have been teed up. There was a few. I remember there was one foul where they fouled Cantor, they fouled him good, the refs called it, and like four different Clippers just like jumped up and down and couldn't believe that such a call was made. It was just like, come on, guys, have some self-respect.
Yeah. Ugh.
On the flip side of that, though, I guess that is helping them win. They're 32-14 now, so maybe they think that the more they work the refs, the more wins they're going to get. I mean, that may be helping them.
It might be, and I'll tell you tonight, watching them a little bit, with exception of a few plays, it seemed like this is a much more defensive-minded Clippers team than I've seen in the past. Am I right?
Yeah, they've been softer on defense in years past. I think Blake's been better defensively this year. I mean, Jordan has always been good defensively. Matt Barnes is a really good defender. Chris Paul's a really good defender, which might be easy to forget sometimes because of his size, but he's a really good perimeter defender. So they have the personnel to do it, and they have been doing it this year.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I wonder. In fact, during their streak, I don't know where I saw it, but that's one of the things that was brought up, that during their win streak, defensively, they have buckled down quite a bit. I mean, it helps that they're scoring, 107 points per game, which David Locke on the radio, by the way, mentioned. It's impressive that the Jazz held them to just 94 points. A team that puts 107 points on the board, yet the Jazz defensively did the job that they needed to. But it's just another example of the Jazz offensively not matching what they're doing defensively.
Yeah, they've had a few losses where you're able to walk away and go, well, at least their defense looked really good.
Yeah.
The offense needs to get there.
Okay, so I want to know if you're on the same page as me. Give me your positives tonight. Give me the one biggest positive or biggest thing that stood out about the Jazz tonight on either end of the floor.
On either end? Well, I would say Cantor was a real positive tonight. He was aggressive. He didn't back down. He was 21-11, so he was our best player statistically. I really enjoyed what he was able to do. I didn't see too many defensive lapses on his part either. It was a very evenly contested game.
Yeah, it was. And he had to defend Blake Griffin for a large part of the fourth quarter, and I thought he did a very good job of that down the stretch.
Yeah. Favors fought hard. He was 18-9. I mean, between those two guys, so what is that? 39 points and 20 rebounds?
Yeah.
That's a good night. That's a good night you want from your 4-5.
Well, and, you know, you'll put Cantor in there. I will say I agree with you, and I will take and go one step more. I saw something from Derek Favors tonight that I hope we get to see a lot more of going forward. And that was a very, very chippy. I mean, Derek played with a chip on his shoulder in that game tonight, especially in the second half. You saw that very much in the third quarter. Going into the fourth quarter, he didn't back down, really went after Blake Griffin on the offensive end. It was very aggressive on the offensive end. I liked seeing that. And you could see it on his face. He had a chippiness about him.
And he outplayed Blake Griffin. I mean, not by much, but he really did. Blake Griffin finishes with 17-7 and one block. Derek is 18-9 with two blocks. I mean, they were going at it, and he was matching him.
And let's be fair, Blake Griffin had 10 of those through three quarters. So, I mean, he scored seven late in the game when they needed him to, but the Jazz, specifically Derek, really, really frustrated Blake over the course of three quarters tonight.
Yeah.
So, no, one thing I saw in that fourth quarter, and I was on the road, so I listened to it. You know, the complaining and the reffing aside, the Jazz are still finding ways to lose in the fourth quarter, if you ask me, against some of the teams they're playing with. And they did it again tonight. Turnovers, the inbounds play with 4 seconds left on the shot clock. Ron Boone.
Yeah, that was a bad one.
Yeah, Ron Boone and David Locke both talked about that they don't understand why Trey Burke, why that ended up the way that it did. It should have been better.
Yeah, Bowler and Matt talked about it too. Like Bowler said, I don't think Trey knew how much time was on the clock. And Matt said, well, there's only 4 seconds in a timeout. You have to know how much time's on the clock.
Exactly.
That was a confusing one. Were you already on the road when Cantor got hammered under the basket and Matt Barnes stared him down?
Yes. Yes, I was on the road, and I heard Locke and Boone talk about
that
actually.
That was insane, because Cantor got initially fouled. There was a body foul. They didn't call it, and that's no big deal. Barnes slammed down hard on him twice. He brought his arm and just like karate chopped across his body, and they didn't call anything. And then he just stared Cantor down like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I can't believe that there was no foul, no tech, no anything, especially the way the game had been going up to that point. Like, all of a sudden, all three refs like refused to look that direction or something. It just didn't make sense to me.
Well, I saw that, and I was thinking that what Barnes did was worse than what Blake Griffin did when he got his tee. You know, the stare down was,
yeah, you're right.
4 seconds.
Exactly. Blake got teed, and then Matt Barnes basically does it worse, and they don't call anything.
Yeah. So. And Locke and Boone were all over that on the radio. Both of them were, I don't know if livid's the word, but both were pointing that out and could not understand. They were actually, both of them were quite animated on a couple of plays down the stretch. In fact, I think or after that, there was a foul that was called on the Jazz that really wasn't a foul. And Boone, mm-hmm. Locke asked Boone about it like three times. And Boone said, I'll talk to you off the air about it.
I could watch the Jazz lose by 5 to the Spurs or the Thunder or the Blazers. And you understand, and you kind of think, woulda, coulda, shoulda. but this one just leaves such a bad taste in my mouth just because of how the Clippers carry themselves. They're not a fun team. They're not an enjoyable team. And they just don't have that respect for the game that other teams seem to. They might be my least favorite team to watch right now, least of playoff teams.
Would you say there's
some teams you don't like? I mean, there are some teams I don't like to watch just because it's ugly. But the Clippers are just, they're just babies. It's just annoying.
Would you say it's a bit of I think it teeters on either, maybe teeters on arrogance / spoiled brattiness?
Yeah. It's like playing with brats. It's like you're playing with them and the game doesn't go the way, so they threaten to quit and you're like, fine. And then they suddenly act like they're enjoying it and they didn't do anything wrong. I mean, it kind of gives me that same emotional reaction just watching them hop all over the place and cry after every play. And then it cuts to the coach and the coach is yelling at the ref the entire time. And even when the foul is obvious, they still are just lamenting and clutching their pearls and falling on their fainting couch going, how could you call such a thing? It's just ridiculous.
Clutching their pearls and fainting on the couch. There is two new quotes right there from John English, folks. Clutching pearls and fainting on the couch. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, that mentality is why I just do not think the Clippers can win a title. It's just so, I mean, you pull that crap against lottery teams and refs are going to give you some stuff, but when they get deeper in the playoffs, I mean, refs aren't going to put up with that. I can't believe refs would put up with that.
No, I'm with you.
I mean, they obviously do in the regular season, but, you know, if the Clippers go up against who are they paired against right now? Who would they go up against? Maybe I don't have the standings.
What are they? What are the standings? And I want to say the Clippers aren't they in the 4-5 spot? I think aren't and so
yeah,
they probably
so
go
is
up
that
against
the Rockets or the Blazers or
it's either the Rock. I think it's the Blazers because I think Memphis is at number 3. So I think. Or no.
Okay,
it might be the Rockets.
No, it's the Rockets. It's the Clippers and Rockets.
That might be an interesting match. The big baby team against the very not so fun to watch James Harden and Dwight Howard duo. I don't know. That wouldn't be a fun series to watch, truthfully.
That series is going to be on TNT with all the drama.
What?
Devin says that would be on TNT with all the drama. Oh boy, Devin, you're just full of surprises tonight, aren't you?
let's touch on that for a minute. Let's play. If the playoffs started today, you'd have the number 1 Warriors against the number 8 Suns. That would be a very fun series, even if the Warriors would waste them.
I think Warriors win that in 5.
Yeah. You have the number 2 Grizzlies against the number 7 Dallas.
That'd be
I kind of like that.
So do I. That could go
that
the
would
distance.
Be interesting.
That could go the distance.
You have number 3 Blazers against the number 6 Spurs. That would be a really good match. Ooh,
that might be my upset round of the playoffs, too.
And then you'd have the Clippers and Rockets, which I would just skip altogether.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and if the playoffs were to start today, I'd have a hard time picking against San Antonio in the series against Portland. Just as no matter how good the Portland and the Lillard plays, the depth of San Antonio, the maturity of San Antonio, how you can't bet against it in the series like that. You just can't.
Yeah, and Aldridge has issues with his thumb, so who knows how much longer.
And Damian Lillard,
he's going to be able to play through that.
And Damian Lillard gives up 51 points to the opposing point guard.
Yeah. Here's another thing. If the playoffs start today, the Thunder are out.
Ooh.
So they're still, I mean, they're not, They got to catch up. In fact, they're behind the Pelicans now. The Pelicans are ninth.
Wow.
So both of those teams keep having to hope that Phoenix stumbles. And Phoenix is, I mean, Phoenix lost their last two, so they're giving them the chance. And maybe they will. I mean, we're still just 40-something games in the season. Like, so, what are we, 47 games-ish? So there's plenty of times for New Orleans to catch up, but they're not there yet.
So who makes the eighth seed out of those three teams? If you could pick, going down the stretch, Phoenix, Oklahoma City, or New Orleans?
Going all the way to April, I still think Oklahoma overtakes Phoenix.
I would agree.
I think it happens. But, you know, I think the Thunder just might be the eighth seed.
Okay.
Which is bizarre.
Yeah, it is.
And then you'd have the Warriors Thunder, which would just be...
probably one of the better series to
madness.
Watch. Yeah, it would.
Yeah, that would be the most must-see 1-8 matchup in playoff history.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm slightly swaying off topic just a bit. Did Atlanta pull off their 17th straight tonight?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep, they have a 17-game winning streak.
Watch out.
And they're still don't have the best record in the NBA.
No, they got second. Yeah, but not by much. The last time I checked, it was a half a game.
Yeah, they're 38-8. The Warriors are 36-7. So.
Yeah, so still a half a game difference.
Yeah.
Did you see the home records on both of them too? The Warriors have lost one at home all season. Atlanta's lost three.
Yeah, Warriors have lost two.
Oh, did they lose just barely tonight then or last night?
They lost a game and it says two. So were they at home tonight? And that would be it.
Yeah, that'd have to be it. That's insane.
Okay, then.
Five losses at home between two teams in a season. That's just unheard of. So, anyway, that was my off-topic moment. So, let's go back to the Jazz and the current stretch they're on.
Yeah, to build on the defense of the Jazz, the Clippers are a really good offense. And I'm just pulling up what they've done lately. I keep using the Miami game as my benchmark. And I'm looking at the rest of the league. And the Clippers are the number two offense in the league over the last 6 weeks behind the Warriors. So they held the number two offense to 94 points. Let's see where the Clippers are defensively. Well, they're in the middle of the pack defensively.
So
the Clippers had a good defensive night for them anyway. But offensively, the Jazz were able to really frustrate them.
So what did the Clippers?
Not enough, but they were able to do some.
What did the Clippers shoot in the second half? Because they were 57% at halftime.
I don't know what they break that down.
I don't know what they ended. What did they end the night percentage wise from the field? That's what I don't remember. Because they, when I saw the halftime stats, they were at 57% and still only up by one.
I closed the box score. I'm getting back into it. They were 44.7% in the night.
That's, yeah, the Jazz turned it up a notch in the second half then. That's pretty good. So.
Yeah, they held Clippers to 19 in that third quarter, and I think that's where their percentage really went down. And then they were able to come back in the fourth and take over. You know what? I mean, if you're just kind of looking at the numbers and saying, where did the Jazz lose? It's probably the three-point shooting.
Yeah.
Clippers were 9 of 26. Jazz were 5 of 24. We had 2 from Ingles, 2 from Trey, and that's it. Gordon was 0 for 5 from 3. Trey was 2 of 7, so he missed 5. Dante was 1 for 5.
So
Dante didn't have a very good game tonight.
No, and that's one of two questions I was going to ask you about, because in the end, I think Trey had the better game. He may not have shot well, but I thought Trey had a decent game against the Clippers. Dante just struggled. And you know what? You're going up against Chris Paul. You're going up one of the best point guards in the league, and I don't know that I anticipated Dante to have that good a night against Chris Paul. I really didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, Dante struggled against him, and Trey looked willing to accept the challenge. And, you know, he might not have been able to take Chris Paul off his game. We'll see. Chris Paul finished 21-6. But he was ready to hang with him and, you know, try to force some things. Trey finished 11 points and one assist.
But he had six rebounds, five rebounds?
Four.
Okay, I was four. I was too many.
That's interesting. This is another night where the assists aren't coming from the point guards.
Yeah.
Trey and Dante had two assists between them. You had Joe Ingles led the way in assists again. He had seven assists. Hayward had five assists. Seems like the Boston game was similar to that, too.
Yeah.
Boston game, Trey had zero assists. Dante had two assists. Joe Ingles had five assists. But yeah, Joe's been our leading assist man for at least the last two games, maybe more.
Okay, so that's interesting because that's the one thing about the offense that watching is, you know, and I read a piece the other day from Clint about positionless basketball and the Jazz are finally playing that. And it takes me back to Trey and Dante and the discussion. We've hashed it out enough, so we don't have to hash it out anymore. But the fact is you're going to have nights where different guys are going to have assists because I think that the offense in the motion, the way it is, you're going to need your point guards to sometimes just make shots. That's all you're going to need. Guys just have to make shots, whoever it is on the floor, wherever they are on the floor. So you might have one guy with five or six assists and it might be a forward, whereas you'll have your point guard with only one assist, but he might have 12 points on six shots or something, seven shots.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that worked that way in Boston. Trey had 18 points against Boston. So it was okay that he didn't have assists because he wasn't doing the other things to help the team win.
Right.
But I feel like I said this in the last episode, this offense is designed to work as long as you guys can shoot.
Yep.
And if they keep missing open shots, then the wins aren't going to come. But everything else is kind of in place to succeed. They just need to make their shots.
And everybody missed open shots tonight. And that was that's my other question to you is Gordon Hayward, and this was mentioned on the radio on my way here tonight, Gordon Hayward has had horrible games against the Clippers this year. Can't seem to play very well against them. Tonight, again, and he had open look after open look, couldn't make them, and then struggled in other areas. Is it something the Clippers are doing, or is it something mental with Gordon Hayward?
Well, he still has these games sometimes. He was 4 of 13 from the floor, so he only had 11 points, and it's never good when your field goal attempts is higher than your actual points. But Gordon's still just being on the floor gives the team a chance to win. He was a plus three tonight. The Jazz lost by five. So
right.
For those 10, 11 minutes, Gordon's not on the floor. The Jazz are minus eight.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you're just going by that, you could say that the real weakness of the team was Elijah Millsap. He was minus 10, didn't even take a shot for his time on the floor.
Which is interesting because I think he was key in some of the defensive stops on Chris Paul tonight, too. He frustrated him in a couple of situations.
He had a lot of hustle. He had two assists. He had a rebound. A
couple steals.
He did some things that aren't going to show up in the box score.
Right.
Yeah, he was quick. He had a lot of quickness tonight. I remember one time he just darted down there, and he got right into the basket, and he had this nice little easy dish decanter. Rudy didn't get to play much tonight. He only played for 10 minutes.
Really? Well, yeah. But then you go back.
He got in foul trouble early, but they didn't use him much in the second half either.
You go back to the numbers you just gave out, though. 40 points between your two bigs and 20 rebounds. It's not like, not that you have much room.
When your starters are playing well, you don't take them out.
Exactly. So, yeah. Not much room for Rudy when you've got Cantor and Favors playing as well as they did. So
yeah, it was just one of those nights where he just wasn't going to get minutes. At least he got a block.
Jazz going to beat Golden State? Why did I laugh? Why do I
laugh would
at this?
Not bet paper money on it.
It
would be nice. The Warriors lost the other day. I think it was yesterday they lost. So, you know, maybe we can put them on a 2-game losing streak because the Warriors just don't know who they are anymore.
One loss and the Warriors don't know who they are anymore.
They're drifting in and out of pubs, listening to Arcadian music going, why?
Klay Thompson drops 37 and a quarter and the Warriors start to fall apart.
Yeah, the Warriors, I just hope they don't get blown out. The Warriors are so much better than everyone else right now.
They are.
It's not even fair. They're the number one offense and the number four defense in the past 20 games.
And they're fun to watch.
It's just like far and away above everybody. Yeah, and they're fun to watch. I mean, now that Mark Jackson isn't their coach, I feel like I can enjoy the Warriors for what they are. And I do. I like and respect how that team's working. I like the changes Steve Kerr's made.
Yeah.
And they are a fun team to watch. You know, they're a team that you wouldn't mind winning the championship this year.
And
in fact, I would love it if we got a Warriors Hawks final. I think that would just be really cool.
That could be fun. That could be interesting. I wonder what it does for ratings.
Ratings probably wouldn't be great, but they'd be good games. That's the thing with the NBA. They're not quite like the NFL where it doesn't matter what the two teams are in your championship game. I mean, anyone can be in the Super Bowl and you'd get good ratings. And the NBA isn't quite there yet. Oh, they're a long way from there. They still rely heavily on the stars and the big market teams. But
okay, so I want to throw...
You know, maybe that can bring people around if we had a Warriors-Hawks finals. And
maybe.
It wound up being like a really incredible series. Maybe that'd be good for the league.
Could be. So, all right, before we... I don't know where you want to go to next, but I want to jump to one question off of Twitter because we've been discussing the Clippers tonight, but this is a game. This is a question that I thought was worth asking. Our friend Garrett Fahler, on Twitter asked, do Booker and Blake Griffin get into another fight? And if so, how bad does Booker destroy him? We didn't see a fight between them tonight. We saw something frustration wise come out, but if they were to get into a fight, who's your money on, Booker or Griffin?
An actual fight, Booker. Griffin is just such a punk. And here's the thing. When I read Griffin's essay on Donald Sterling, it like made me really appreciate him and like him. I was like, this is really cool. I think I could like Blake Griffin. And then you watch him on the court, and it's like, no, he's a total punk. Forget it.
And it's funny, the first couple of years in the league, I'll never forget that he was, and I don't know if it was media that played him out this way or if it was him that made him look like, well, he's the guy that everybody goes after because he's always posterizing people. So we're just going to make him out to be the bad guy. And he tried to play this good guy look like, no, everybody just hates me. All I do is play basketball.
I remember watching national guys talk about how Griffin's right to get upset because he just gets hammered down there. And you're like, man, he whines after every call. I mean, sure, he gets some hard fouls, but you're just trying to stop the guy from scoring. I mean, all the big guys are going to take hard fouls, and I don't know. There's just something really annoying about him that I just have no sympathy for him.
Well, compare what he's getting against what Karl Malone got back in the 90s. I don't think you can say that Blake Griffin's getting hit any harder or any more often than Malone
exactly.
was.
No, he's not. You watch any hardwood classic game, any game from the 80s and 90s, and they are just knocking each other around. And they are doing all kinds of things you can't believe they got away with. I mean, they can scream at refs and there's no tech. They can throw things.
Yeah.
They can like punch each other. they can start getting into a pushing match on the floor, and all the refs do is break it up and start the game over. I mean, now it'd be double techs, ejections, you know, clear the floors. And back then it was just like, all right, they both got the pushing out of the way. Now let's go back to the game. It's really funny to go back and watch.
We can blame Ron Artest. Oh, wait, no. Malice in the Palace, Ron Artest.
That honestly was a big, yeah.
Might have to be.
It really was. Think about it. The league was at that point where, I mean, when you watch that game, when you watch it build to that, and it's worth going back and looking. I mean, Ben Wallace is like trying to incite a riot. He's just like, how can this injustice stand? And he's just really trying to stir up the bloodlust of the crowd. And so Artest he like hops on the scorer's table. He's just kind of clowning. But then someone hits him with a cup, and then that's when it all just explodes. And it's pretty amazing, and it's kind of scary to think about these guys actually running in the stands and punching people.
Yeah.
But yeah, after that, they really wanted to clean the game up, and it wasn't just the gigantic fouls they gave them, but yeah, they really did crack down on making sure emotions don't get out of hand.
Yeah.
And so we're going to call techs faster, and we're going to call touch fouls more. And
then the Clippers come along.
Yeah. And then the Clippers come along, and they're taking advantage of every single rule, taking it right to the line, crying about everything, throwing their arms in the air. And you know what? Someone had pointed this out a few years ago, and it kind of came back to me today, is Blake really wasn't like this his rookie year, but it was really when Chris Paul joined the Clippers that everyone just kind of really started getting into the let's cry and flop after everything.
What does that say about Chris Paul?
That's what I mean. I'll just set that on the table and let it sit there.
Yep, yep. It's just there's the plate of cookies for everybody, just so you all know.
Okay, it's actually getting kind of late. Do you have any final thoughts?
No, I think we covered it. We hashed out this Clippers game tonight probably more than anything. I mean, yeah. No, my final thoughts really are around turnovers. Jazz did it again in the fourth quarter tonight. Jazz found a way to lose against the Boston Celtics because of turnovers. And, you know, tonight the Jazz took care of the ball, but in the fourth quarter, just costly turnovers. And I think that's youth. It's a young team that still is not finding they're not there yet. They're proving that they're not there yet.
Yeah, I mean, Boston, they really lost that game in the first half, but the Clippers is just one or two plays they could have been able to stay in it, and it just wasn't quite there.
And, you know, they will
be. I know it's sad because I hate the Clippers, but they couldn't quite do it.
Jazz will be there. It'll just take – we still have to just ride the wave right now. It just takes time. It has to. So, nope, that covers it for me. Any final thoughts from you, or is that it?
No, this one's kind of a shorter one, so maybe we can do one again in a few days, make up for it.
All right, sounds like a plan. Well, thank you all for joining us for a special post-game edition of the Jedi and Germ Show, brought to you by, again, Torn by Sports. We want to thank Devin Masters for helping us produce the show. We appreciate you all listening and interacting with us. Until next time, good night. John, take us out.
Stay classy, San Diego.